Hey there, welcome to Reality TV. As always, I'm your host, Jody, and this week we are going to be breaking down the best and best of the worst, either or and neither nor. Don't know what the grammar rules are, nor do I have time to look them up because we are going to be talking about TLC's Unexpected, Love After Lockup, and 90 Day Fiancé Before the 90 Days. Fear not if you also watch 90 Day Fiancé the other way, because I absolutely watched it. And hey, if you subscribe to Patreon, you're listening to this on Monday. That's right, 3 days before it drops on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you are listening to this right now. So if you are a Patreon subscriber, meet up with me tonight on Twitter. I'll be live tweeting the show. Now, before I jump into Unexpected right off the bat, I'm going to thank Kimberly and Kelly, KK. Hopefully you are not one of the Kardashians. And in that case, that would be KKK. We're not going to go down that way. Anyway, I just want to say thank you for being my newest Patreon subscribers. Thank you for supporting the show. You know, $5 a month, $10 a month, it's a lot of money. But for $1 a month, you get all of these episodes that you're listening to right now, early and ad-free, most of the time by Monday and Tuesday. So if you want to support the show, support Reality TV, please check it out, patreon.com/realityvpod. And if that is just a little bit too much to swing, pretty please with a cookie from the cookie jar on top, leave a 5-star review on iTunes. The more ratings and reviews we get, the more it spreads the, I don't know, listenership. It's this crazy algorithm. Trust me, it works, and I truly appreciate it. Now, with all of that out of the way, let's get right into TLC's Unexpected. I know I haven't watched this show in quite a few weeks, you know, life in general catching up to me, but every time I sit down and I watch a full episode, I remember how much I love this show. It's a better quality, more genuine or more real Teen Mom. Those of you who are watching Teen Mom, I mean, how many more times can we see these girls do the same thing? How many more times do we need to see Chelsea and Cole hug each other and say, "Love you, babe," in their baby voices? But Unexpected, it's still this little treasure, this nugget of teen pregnancy goodness. Oh yeah, it's sick and twisted. So let's start right there with Matthew and Haley. Have I mentioned how much I hate Matthew? And Haley, who looks like a new generation of Cabbage Patch dolls, she found out that wannabe, scrawny, shaden baby daddy Matthew is now dating that former best friends of her, also named Haley. So he broke up with her over a text because, you know, he's a douche and he's, what, 12 years old? But oh, here go hell come. Mama Cabbage Patch, Mama Patch, if you will, she is pissed and her cabbage claws are coming out. Now, I'm sure I have asked this before, but how the hell does Matthew get not one, but two girls? It has been a very long time since middle school, high school. I don't know. I swear to God, Haley looks like she's 11 and Matthew looks like he's 12. However old they are, it doesn't matter because girls of that age, whatever it is, they need to start aiming higher. I'm going to talk directly to you, young girls, ladies. It's 2019, almost 2020. Search, hashtag, search your yearbook, whatever you need to do. You can do better. Aim for the stars. Now, Tyra and Alex, this couple, I really don't know how I feel about them because as much as I feel like I shouldn't like Tyra, I kind of do. And Alex, I really like this kid. And maybe it's because I feel like I need to adopt him and raise him in my home because his grandmother and mother are batshit crazy. Something about these two, I feel like, not that they'll last necessarily, but that they will at least have a hashtag co-parenting relationship. I feel like there's going to be a lot of hashtags this episode. Just get ready for it. So Tyra is going to be sleeping over at Alex's mom's and grandma's house because her mom is packing. They're going to move to a bigger house because there's 5 adults and, I don't know, like 3.5 babies wherever they live. But Tyra's nervous because, as we saw a couple weeks ago, Alex's grandma and mom are just nasty to her. They're very condescending. And every comment they make, even later in this episode when Tyra seemed to overlook it, it's always, that's my baby, that's my little bubba, and all this bullshit, undermining the fact that Tyra is actually their grandchild and great-grandchild's mother. But Tyra's mom's house, I don't really blame Alex for not wanting to live there because that house is kind of nasty. And it's not because of the size or the fact that it may or may not be a trailer. I don't really care. It's just the fact that there is shit everywhere. At that point, I highly suggest, as an untrained organizational expert, you just need to toss the shit. Throw out the knickknacks, start fresh. Packing a house, however organized you are, it sucks. So this is the perfect time. If you tend to be a pack rat, like it appears Tyra's mom is, it's time to KonMari that shit. Clear it out. It is very liberating. It can be life-changing, really. I love a good cleaning purge. It's like losing weight, really. The weight that you can't seem to get off anywhere on your body, you will feel physically and emotionally lighter once you just throw shit away. That's my cleaning advice and my life advice for the week. Now, Chloe and Max, let's just do a cleansing breath here because we all know how much Max pisses the universe off. Okay, let's start in a happy place with senior prom. It is very important to Chloe because she didn't get to go last year, you guys. I know. Tear down the cheek. Let's all feel so badly for Chloe. Not only do I think proms in general are pretty stupid, I think for Chloe in particular, it's a massive waste of money. And really for everyone, it's a massive waste of money. And it's gotten so out of control. My sister told me how much her daughter spent on prom dresses. The cheapest one was still more expensive than my wedding dress. That's ridiculous. We've got to reel it in, people, share dresses, or maybe just do away with the whole dressing up thing, prom in general. And I understand this is very easy for me to say because I don't have a daughter or son that age. I'll probably be eating my words and loving every second of it later on. But for Chloe, she's had way bigger life experiences at this point. She's had a child. Her boyfriend is in rehab. Isn't there something better to do with your time than be getting dressed up and going out? Well, I guess she does deserve just to like go out for the night, right? Okay. I changed my mind. She can go out, have a good time. Fuck it. But I do have a bone or a makeup applicator to pick with the amount of makeup that these girls were putting on. Is this just the norm, the thing now? I don't know if it was like foundation or contouring. This pancake thick application, I don't think it looks good on anyone. You think that you look like some airbrush beauty on the cover of whatever magazine youngsters get these days, 17, YM, Tiger Beat, but it doesn't look that way in person. You just look dirty. And Chloe didn't look like her face was dirty. They zoomed in and she had eyeliner glopped under her eyes. Maybe I'm doing it incorrectly, but I do any concealer foundation before I do my eye makeup. Maybe I should be doing it afterwards so that when it falls, I wipe it away. Anyway, that was just a lot. I mean, can you imagine how much money these parents are dropping on makeup alone? Because some of that was name brand makeup. I didn't even start buying that kind of stuff until maybe a year or two ago when I realized, oh, when you buy a little bit more expensive stuff, it actually lasts way longer and you don't have greasy eyelids and shit. Anyhow, back to Chloe and this prom night. The whole thing is that once again, Chloe is lying. She's keeping secrets about Caillou. So Jessica is annoyed and she's skeptical. I understand everyone hates Jessica. She needles into all of Chloe's business. She gets involved. She is very high strung. However, I still am on Jessica's side. I'm not saying I want to be her friend or that I would want to go out to drinks with her because I'm already an anxious person and she would just hype me up even more than I already am. But I understand where she's coming from 100%. Chloe lies all the time. She can't really be trusted. And let's be real. Chloe's not paying for all of, what's the daughter's name? Ava. She's not paying for Ava's shit. Jessica's paying for it. So if she's living under her roof and she's paying for everything, I do think Chloe has an obligation to fill her mom in on this shit, especially because Chloe's got a little sister. And if you're bringing that kind of guy around into your home, which we know Chloe does, Jessica and husband Jessica do have a right to get involved. So where is Max? Why is he not going to prom? Well, it's because he is in court-ordered rehab. So, Chloe, what are you going to do about it? She's just going to say he's doing something for probation, which is technically right. I can't stand it. I would want to smack that smile right off of Chloe's face if I were Jessica. I'm not condoning corporal punishment, but I'm just saying when my mom smacked me across the face when I was 8 years old in the back of a Kmart because I was screaming for my New Kids on the Block sheets that I wanted and never got, it worked. All right. Now, moving on to Ryla and Anthony. Now, if I remember correctly, I believe it was Holly in our Facebook group posted that Ryla went to the hospital thinking that her water broke, but it was actually sexual fluids and that her mom or grandma was all up in there touching it. Who, if that is the case, and if this kind of thing happens, that alone, that one possible scenario would rule out a nursing career for me. I mean, it's probably a little late for me to be going back. Actually, you know what? Fuck that. It is never too late to go back to school. Always learning. But no, I could not do nursing just for that one reason. I think I might rather wipe someone's poopy butt if they were sick, if they were like a really cute, sick, older person that really needed help because they didn't have any other loved ones. I would rather do that than have to touch someone's sexual fluids. Oh, God, that's so disgusting. That would certainly raise my blood pressure. See how I transition there? Well, there you go. Ryla has high blood pressure. She's preeclamptic, so she's got to go to the hospital. I wonder what might be causing her high blood pressure. Would it be the fact that her brother is like elbow deep into his nose, carving out and eating a booger? Or would it be because her mom is screaming at her, oh my God, you have high blood pressure. The baby could die. Where is Anthony? Do you understand that you're having a baby today? Are you ready for the baby today? Today, the baby is coming. She's a nurse, right? Shouldn't she know they should be like focusing on breathing? Don't worry about it. We're going to get you there. You're going to be in the best of hands. What the fuck is her mom doing? I certainly do not want her mom as my labor and delivery nurse. No freaking way. And can we just talk about the kid in the backseat? I kind of feel bad for him because, yeah, I put him on the cover art for this week's episode, but also because he's forever going to be known as the nose picker, at least in my eyes. That's one thing I cannot deal with kids is nose picking. God help my kids if they ever are caught picking their nose. They know that if they are near or around me, or if there is any even hint in my mind that they are picking their nose, I will call them out on that shit and just point them in and say, nose picker. That cannot happen. That is the most disgusting thing. Kids picking their nose, kids with, or really people in general, with nasty crud under their fingernails, and kids that have earwax just spilling out of their ears. Those three things, nope, I'm sorry, I will judge your parenting. I might let you go with like a warning, but if it's time and time again that I'm seeing your kid with all or one of those three things, I'm going to start to wonder. All right, I'm saying I'm an asshole. I'm admitting to it. So we end the episode with Ryla, or at least her segment, where it starts to get really serious, where she may need to have an emergency C-section, and that's really scary shit. I can imagine a mom seeing their teenager having to go through that stuff. So fingers crossed everything ends up okay. I think she ends up having a healthy baby, right? Ugh, I hope so. Now, Michaela and Kaylin. Oh, my queen Shelley. She is just a vision in my favorite color, olive green. I feel like that was just a gift to all of us, really made her eyes pop. I mean, she just speaks the truth. She's like the Oprah of our generation. She speaks with clarity, fearlessness, and I'm saying it right now, I think Shelley may want to run in 2020 if her politics agree with mine. Okay, anyhow, let's get serious here because I really am going to go off on Michaela as I always do. Take that brat to court. Yes, get your rights in writing. I have witnessed this exact same bullshit in my own family, and without a doubt, courts just assume mothers are justified 100% of the time and default to them having all of the rights. The system is set up in a mom's favor, and maybe that is okay. More often than not, it probably is. However, there are also crazy bitches like Michaela that know how to work the system, and they manipulate everyone around them to believe their lies. They will set up their baby daddies to look like assholes and to fail. They'll make situations where they can't win. Just like Shelley was talking about with her sister, she'll say, you can only come over when they're home, but then her grandparents will say, you can't come over. And then she can say, well, he's never here. He never sees them. Well, you set him up to fail. Kaylin has done nothing to deserve not seeing his kids. And Kaylin's feelings aside, think about your children, Michaela. They deserve to have a loving father. It is downright abuse to deny your kids that relationship simply because of your own selfishness and immaturity. You gotta love your kids more than you hate your ex. And trust me, and trust everyone who has been through this or has been parallel to situations, those kids will grow up and they will resent you more than the parent that you have been pushing away and isolating. It's really unfortunate. Michaela is so up her own ass and everyone around her is just feeding into this narcissism. Her kids are going to be the ones to suffer. She was boohooing about not having a relationship with her mom and her dad, yet she is repeating the cycle. And shame on all of the grown adults around her and her, because she's an adult and she loves to insist that she is, but then she acts like a child. I could go on and on and on about this girl because, unfortunately, there are a lot of young women like her and a lot of older women like her as well, and it's got to be called out. That's bullshit. So there you go. There is my stump speech for Shelley 2020. All right, after a very quick break, let's get into Love After Lockup and 90 Day Fiancé before the 90 days. Let's talk about Love After Lockup first. This episode was titled Love the Way You Lie. And I think it might be in reference to Alex's newest single to Glorietta. It goes a little something like this. Glorietta, I love the way you line your eyebrows. Brush them down. Down towards your eyes, like little furry beanie boos. I'll find you, Glorietta. Have you guys heard it? It's like the fall anthem of 2019 or something, all over the place. Now let's talk about Angela and Tony first, because Angela is like a new person. She is fresh off of seeing Tony and she's like a charging bull. I really haven't seen this level of level-headedness and common sense in Angela ever since we met her. Now, Tony wants to stay together with Angela, but she says she needs to break up with him. But first, she's got to get her hands on that phone. For some reason, the police actually released all of Tony's shit to Angela, so she's tearing through this oversized duffel bag. I don't know if that's actually legal or if Angela convinced them that, I don't know, she had Tommy's body in it and she needed to give him fresh air. I don't know how they just gave all his shit to her unless he agreed to it. Someone let me know if you know what this whole process is, because somehow that doesn't seem right. Like, could I just go down to my police station and say, that guy back there said I could have his shit and they just give it to me? Because if that is the case, that's basically going to be my new hobby. Anyhow, Angela goes through the bag. She finds this Samsung, plugs that sucker in, lights up a cancer stick, of course, and launches her investigation. Now, I may or may not have been extremely jealous of her at this moment, because that is the kind of thing I wish I could do for a living. I am so good at a deep dive. Everyone knows real information isn't on the first or second page of Google. You go like 3-4 pages deep, and that is exactly what Angela did. She went 3 or 4 layers deep into text messages and contact lists, and she found out that this guy, Michael, I know, real ironic, isn't it? Michael is really Michelle, and Tony is in love with Michelle. He's also a fucking stalker and admits to being a stalker in these text messages. So I paused it. I zoomed in, you know, as a good Angela colleague does. Oh my God, these text messages were super scary. Some of them said, okay, I wrote these down. I'm not going to keep stalking you. If you don't answer me, I'm going to your mom's house. I mean, really? Okay. You'll never have a love like mine. You'll be stuck in a rut in life. I promise you that. Answer me right fucking now. I have to say, if you are going to find out that your boyfriend's cheating on you, this is a great way to find out, because this Michelle person starts blowing him off. So not only do you get a fuck you by dishing all this shit in the parking lot, but you also see that someone else gave him a fuck you by ignoring him. I just think that's fucking awesome. Now, what's Tony gonna do? They're interviewing him on, you know, whatever, the closed circuit TV. And he said he's certain that he can talk to Angela into staying with him because, here's another quote, just to show you what a psychopath he is. I'm still very much in love with Angela. In the event we weren't together anymore, well, I'd be pretty much screwed. So I really depend on her at this point. So... remember when you exchanged vows and promised to a person that you were very much in love with them? Sound exactly the same, yes? Well, let's move on to baby girl Glorietta and Alex. Now, my friend Amanda texted me, Amanda from Total Request Podcast, my co-host and host of Amanda Loves to Hate Teen Mom. She texted me when she was watching this weekend, and she was like, Glorietta cannot be real. She's totally acting. No one is this stupid. And I said, I thought she was all too real, that Glorietta is just dumb and blind. But now I don't know. I mean, from the way she dresses, that stupid choker that was not flattering at all, to the asymmetrical, wonky eyebrows that look like they're crying, like those paintings of the Virgin Mary that cry conveniently whenever a church is about to close. That's what they look like. But maybe she is an actress. Like, maybe she is just like Caesar from 90 Day Fiancé, where they want an acting career and this is their big break. Like, maybe they were talking to someone online, but they're amping it up 25 notches because they want to go to Hollywood like the American Idol kids. But let's just suspend disbelief and say that this is real. You'd think sitting at a dinner with a sociopath that is covered in tattoos, who's freshly out of prison, who's buttering your bread, would be the scariest thing at that table. But no, it's Glorietta's marriage and family fantasy. That stuff you doodle about in your journal, Glorietta. Don't be an overgrown middle school Jody. I am being very honest with you. Do not go laying it on thick just because you slept with him one time. Don't do it. The fact that Alex, again, former criminal, he's got the little teardrops or the drool drops coming out of his chin. The fact that he flinched, physically flinched when she said white picket fence and soccer practice in minivan, you know the bitch is crazy. That dude has showered nude in prison for years and Glorietta makes him flinch. That tells you everything we need to know about Glorietta. I'll find you. No. Also, Glorietta belongs in a cartoon, like a weird Christian children's cartoon, a Canadian Christian children's cartoon, not Caillou, something like a Sid the Science Kid, but not Sid because that's too smart, not Little Einsteins, not a Sesame Street, like a knockoff Teletubbies. Maybe it's like on Netflix. Parents, you know what I'm talking about. But she's a friend of. She's not even a main character. She's the overly friendly, soft-spoken neighbor who dresses in like rainbow overalls and she's got a creepy hat. She doesn't speak. She sings everything. You're all getting what I'm throwing down, right? Now, let's fast forward to the pawn shop / jewelry store. Glorietta not only picks the ugliest ring I've ever seen in my life. Maybe it's because I'm not a heart person, so maybe I'm an asshole just for that. But she fingers all the rings. She paws her nasty fat fingers on the tops of all the stones. In the words of the great Eileen Davidson, "Beast! Everyone knows you slide the ring on. You don't get oil from your fingers on the top of a stone. That's like walking up to a newborn and high-fiving them in the face. You just don't do it." Now, speaking of newborns, Glorietta says her future babies can be Muslim now. And there was a whole confusion over dinner. She said Muslim, and then he said Islam. She's so fucking stupid. You know, great to see how Glorietta thinks things through. Just throw something once before shiny at her, and she'll change her mind about minor details like religion, children, family members. And also, that proposal sucked, by the way. Plan something, you slacker. Preferably something private, because it grossed me out when they kissed, so I can only imagine what the jeweler and whoever the sidekick chick was. That had to have been like watching some furry fetish right before your very eyes. And yeah, I'm saying that Glorietta is like a furry because she's all made up like... She kind of looks like a jacked up baby doll, like a baby doll at a factory where the wax and the rubber started melting and they discarded them and they ended up at like Big Lots or the dollar store. Okay, I'm getting into a really bad place. Glorietta's probably very pretty. She just needs a makeover. Let's leave it there. I don't want to shame her. They're both just messed up. Okay, moving on to Lacey, Shane, and John. Oh boy, Shane and Lacey are exhausted, you guys. They were up all night long having sex, and immediately I was grossed out because Shane seems like he's a 15-year-old. He has the brain and the maturity of a 15-year-old, and Lacey probably tucked him in and zipped up his jam jams before she snuck out to do her frickin' makeup, and he fell for it. "Oh, you look so good. I don't know how you look good all through the night without even putting your makeup on. You're stupid." But now let's talk about the real predicament here. Even if Lacey told Shane before about her son Marlo maybe being John's son, do you really think Shane would have turned Lacey down? Hell no. Lacey is the only woman who's going to find Shane's puka shell necklace that he found on the beach attractive. That thing that he is wearing is probably left over from like Spring Break 92 Daytona Beach or Virginia Beach, wherever the hell they were a few weeks ago. Shane's look just screams early to mid 90s adolescent male to me. Like that wet, pointy bang tips and the pierced eyebrows. You know what I'm talking about. I think we're all getting PTSD right now. It's as if I can hear Chumbawamba playing on a loop in the background right now. But we gotta make a good first impression, guys. He's gotta get that necklace centered correctly and his pubic beard combed out. And good thing Lacey's dad is Italian because that's Shane's favorite type of food. So yeah, you can say Shane's got this thing nailed down. Idiots. Needless to say, Father Lacey is rolling his eyes within moments of walking in the door, and he wants to know where they met. Now, at this point, I saw it. It stuck out like a sore thumb or like one of the pointy spikes from Shane's bangs. There in the background, next to a dresser in her dining room with a jumbo can of Lysol spray on top, there was a sconce, a wrought iron sconce with a candle in it that once hung in my old house circa, I'm going to say 2006 to 2010, 11. And I am not proud of it. I mean, even though it was purchased as a set, 2-for-1, 20% off at Bed Bath & Beyond, it was a dark time. Tuscan was in. I'm proud to say I've moved on to like a much more light and bright decor. But it was more alarming than Shane's criminal record that I saw Lacey and I shared something at one time. It's really dark and shameful. Anyhow, back to tits and tips. Father Lacey's hair looks like Bobcat Goldthwait, and he needs to take a seat because he needs to know what the fuck is going on between these two. Now, he already knows that Shane spent the night with Lacey because Shane couldn't wait to tell him that he penetrated his daughter last night. So the interrogation begins. Why are you dating Lacey? Why her? What about her kids? What about her current fiancé, John? And Lacey, what about your kids? Lacey should be the one answering that, not even Shane. What about the kid that might be John's, Lacey? And what about this big plan that you have that John thinks that he's coming home and staying at your house forever next week? What the fuck? I mean, Shane may be a former felon, but Lacey is inherently a bad and damaged person. Bad and damaged. Wow. Vincent and Amber, let's talk about this one. Amber first, because she's still in her clothes from last night. She said she face planted right into strippers. Oops, I'm sorry. I mean her bed last night. Same at that point, because again, she's in the same clothes. That is nasty. Not only did she sleep in those same clothes, she then stays in those same tight jeans and new budding yeast infection. You don't think you want to air things out a bit? Or is it more dangerous to maybe peel out of those jeans and pull that shirt off because you're going to break the seal of contagious bacterial infection stank? You nasty. Now, as far as who conned who, I'm actually with Vincent on this one. Amber is not innocent in this. If she was so creeped out by Vincent and she had doubts about him, then why did she say yes to begin with and then be released to him and spend all this time with him and take advantage of his generous mattress offers? You know, Amber is right. She's a bullshitter and so is Vince. The only difference between the two of them is that he's got creepier Audrina Patridge eyes. That's it. Now, moving on, last but certainly not least, Cheryl and Josh. Cheryl's changing her pants in the car because she wants to be coy and sexy for Josh. I see what she was doing there. Otherwise, she would have changed inside when she grabbed him, not in this tiny space of a driver's seat. I hate that when girls try to be flirty doing stupid shit. Anyway, these two Rhodes Scholars are on their way to Josh's family reunion where they're greeted by a ginormous dog that scared the shit out of me. He might be a very friendly dog, but to me, he looks like the one that I used to run by my old neighborhood, and this thing wanted a piece of my inner thigh fat like you would not believe. I was instantly hashtag triggered, but all of Josh's family were excited to see him, and I was actually excited for him, which is weird watching this show because I think Josh and Cheryl are weird, but I felt happy for the guy. At least he's got a supportive family, right? However, things took a turn for the worse when Josh introduced Cheryl as his chick. I don't like that, and I don't even like Cheryl. And I know she doesn't like Josh's mom and Josh's mom's boyfriend, but maybe the rest of his family would like you, Cheryl, if you didn't just mope around and demand the random children that you're not related to that the ketchup is on the table. Ketchup's on the table. Did you check the table? Did you check the table? Maybe get your ass off the chair. Mingle. Introduce yourself. Smile. Turn on a little charm. But no, we get into this whole tire thing. Her tire has to be replaced immediately. Girl, we all see what you are doing. Trust us. When you start manipulating your partner, okay, I'm going to be specific to these two. She's manipulating Josh to pick her over his mom, and she wants to duck out of this party early, and she wants Josh to go with her. Not a smart move. She would have won huge points with everyone there if either choice A, she ignored the tire for now and just play nice to the hostess, right? You just stay at the party, have a good time, ignore his mom for the most part. Or B, go and get your tire fixed without complaint. Then you come back, you have a smile on your face, no worries. Oh, did you have a good time? Maybe you bring some more wine with you, or in this case, probably like another keg of Natty Light. For the children, naturally. Okay, now let's move on to 90 Day Fiancé Before the 90 Days. God bless this show. As much as I feel like seven couples, especially as a recapper, is a lot to cover, I love every fucking second. So let's get into it. Starting with Darcy and Tom. You know, these two managed to find quite the shooting locations. The one place that's even drier than their thirst for fame, this old church that used to be a beautiful and sacred place until Tom and his stupid scarves show up. I hate when Tom does this thing he does with his glasses, you know, those statement glasses I cannot stand. He takes them off, stares into Darcy's eyes like he's putting a spell on her, you know, like look into my tiny eyes or be dazzled by me, Darcy, when I smile at you with my crooked and protruding canines. Gross, Tom. You're gross and you're a nerd. And I think we can all see through Tom's agenda here. The only reason that he's sleeping with Darcy or allowing Darcy to sleep with him is because he doesn't have to act too cool for anymore. He doesn't have to try to impress Fabian and Stace. He can let his Napoleon complex and wannabe Hugh Grant mask down, which is why, let's fast forward to this dinner where Daddy Nobucks thinks he's hot shit because he ordered a bottle of Cook's. Now, Darcy is playing her best demure, I'm a coquette, with her red lipstick, which is bleeding into every fine line around her mouth. What? Vanderpump Rosé? Why, Tom, you shouldn't have. So thoughtful, so romantic, so quaint. God. Well, then who the hell knows when or how or why? The continuity of this scene goes off the rails. It's horrendous. Why not just give us the regular timeline of this scene? Darcy's lips give it away. She goes from Miranda Sings lipstick to a nude gloss so many times back and forth. A true snip, snap, snip, snap. Do you have any idea the physical toll an inconsistent scene has on a 90 Day Fiancé viewer? So at some point, Tom hands this box to Darcy that contains his house key in it. Let me clarify, his parents' house key. And this is so cruel for a couple of reasons. Not only because he knows she wants a proposal and he made it look like a proposal, but also because the exact same thing happened to her back in a windmill in Amsterdam when Jesse Von Trapp didn't propose to her with not an engagement ring. Tom is an evil asshole right up there with Evelyn, but I kind of fucking loved it. Now then Darcy is packing to leave and Tom summons all his acting chops to play up every single chick flick ending ever filmed. He drops Darcy off at the airport and, hold on, fellas, chaps, if you will, I need to say goodbye one last time, runs through the airport, gives Darcy a hug and a kiss. No, we see right through you. It's so freaking fake. All right, moving on to Rebecca and Zied. All that build up, Zied zooming away on a little scooter, and Rebecca shape-shifting her nose into a red Christmas ornament, all that foreplay for nothing. Zied listens to Rebecca's explanation, and now he's calmed down enough to realize that it's just a technicality and it comes down to paperwork. Now, Caesar and Maria. Caesar is dumb, and I am done. Even if this super hot friend, the potential court-appointed or Jody-appointed legal conservator, if he couldn't talk sense into Caesar, he's a lost cause. Why are we still giving Caesar this platform when clearly he's got more than just maybe a few IQ points that haven't made it to the midline? Something else is going on. I don't know. Whatever. I'm over it. Let's move on from Caesar. Avery and Omar. Turns out getting a visa for Omar isn't as easy as getting your mom to pay for your plane ticket to Lebanon. I don't know if I'm alone in this. I know I found at least one tweet that agrees with me. I don't feel bad for Avery at all. This is not a surprise. In Avery's high school brain, the fact that Omar is Syrian was like romantic and unique and, ooh, it's our love story. It's our journey to matrimony and whatever the hell. It's stupid. Her mom was right. She's too young. She's not even schooled enough on how actual grown-up stuff like laws and war work. I would have thought that being a millennial youngster, Avery would have known how Google works or maybe sought out this immigration attorney ahead of time. But no, she just wanted to tell her mom that she knows everything and then go into this office. And I don't know, this waiver is just going to be granted to her because she takes good selfies after her makeup tutorials with a nice filter. What the fuck? And I know I sound like an unsympathetic jerk, which I am not. I'm actually very sympathetic for families and refugees, you know, people who are separated, husbands and wives and children, siblings, grandparents. It's just hard to be heartbroken for Avery, a girl who's mad at the government because it doesn't work at her preferred pace. Now, there was a scene, actually, I think there were two scenes of Avery crying and acting shocked over all this, but I just kind of zoned out because Carrie, my friend, texted me about this fallout of Meghan and Harry's documentary, and then I got lost in UK Daily Mail. Anyhow, yeah, Avery's sad, but in the end, you should have Googled it. Moving on to Timothy and Jennifer. Now, I honestly can't tell you what happened during that lunch when Jennifer was leaning way too hard into Cher Horowitz because I was too distracted by Tim's new talking head look. Did you catch this? Like, his hair is just slightly off. He just got a fresh cut. It's a lighter brown. Maybe he dyed it, got some highlights, lowlights. His eyebrows are newly arched and groomed. It was very distracting. Now, something happened at that lunch that left them smiling, which is nice. I'm sure the crew that was shooting Jennifer's modeling job wasn't smiling, though, because they had a boyfriend and a screaming toddler that they had a faint interest in. I'm sure they were thrilled to have Violet and Tim 10 feet away staring at them the whole day. You know, maybe Jennifer is a huge successful model and her rider allows her to have her kid in a bobblehead present. These two. Well, later we find out Tim's all pissy because on his last night, he had to stay up late to pack and they couldn't have sex. So Tim is one grumpy morning elf. All right, let's move on. I don't think anyone really gives a shit about these two. And if they're still together, well, they must have a long contract that they have both signed that they're sticking to. Now let's move on to Angela and Michael. I loved this party scene, so let's get to it. Apparently, they're back to being engaged. I mean, they've been on again, off again so many times. I was surprised to see they were actually following through on this. So they're heading to their engagement party, which is the perfect opportunity for Angela to wear a navy tank top with, oh, I'll just say, suspicious white stains all over it. I like to think maybe she had a donut with a very light, not yet set vanilla icing that dripped off of it. Oh, all right, try to put that out of your mind. We're doing this together. It takes a village. In particular, Michael's village, right? Because that's where they're headed for their engagement party. They pull up to this lovely tent. There's a table all set up. It's colorful. Honestly, I thought it was great. It was 100 times better than my engagement party because I didn't have one. I'm way too cheap for that shit. And no one really cares that much. I'm going to give you some advice here. Everyone would rather save their money and get you one gift for your wedding. So skip the engagement party, people. Maybe I should just write a marriage etiquette book. Now, maybe I'm alone on this, but I thought Angela looked so pretty. There goes my book sales, but I'm going to stick to it. I think she looked really pretty in that dress that Michael's family put on her. The getting ready scene was so sweet. And when they danced out the house, you guys, I cried. Like, not cried when my children were born, but I definitely had a Sister Wives Tony frog in my throat. I loved it. The singing and dancing and joy and family all together. If anyone would like to invite me to your Nigerian engagement party, I am there. And I'm not kidding in the least. Like, I know I'm basically a stranger, but I promise my uterus is more beautiful and youthful than Angela's. And I've toted four babies altogether, two babies that weren't mine. So I'm just saying there's a chance. Unlike Angela, who just lied to Michael's mom straight to her gorgeous, wrinkleless face, she's going to rot in some sort of hell or Nigerian jail for that. Yeah. Now, Benjamin and Akini. Ooh, speaking about African jails, Benjamin's heading there in, what, 6 to 9 months? I think I was sweating more than Benjamin during this meeting between Akini's parents and brother Fidel. we left off with Benny Boo sitting down to negotiate the bride price after he gave Father Keeney all that overstock from Sam's Club. Well, now comes the question about money. Benjamin's got to use analogy, so he says, if a bowl is worth 100 shillings, I have 60 or something. Fucking Common Core. We cut to the chase. He's short, really short, but Father Keeney will let him marry a Keeney if he sells a soul to him and promises to pay him some ambiguous amount of money for an unknown period of time, and then he calls for the cakes to be brought in. I think he agreed to this whole marriage because they had already purchased the cakes. And now let's talk about the cakes. I'm going to put on my journalist hat here and talk about the really difficult things. All right. That's what I'm here for. My journalistic integrity is going to just lay out the facts. There was a brown side of the cake and there was a white side of the cake. Is the cake racist? I don't know. I'm not saying it is. I'm not saying it isn't. I really hope that it wasn't supposed to be symbolic of skin color, because then cakes extend to cookies. And selfishly, I'm going to say it. Black and white cookies are one of my favorites, along with a giant oversized iced yellow cookie with a smiley face on it. Will I need to be self-conscious and ask myself, am I a racist if I eat a black and white cookie and I eat one or the other side first? Or maybe I'm just right down the road. I take a bite right down the middle. Maybe I need to just purchase a couple for research purposes only and write it off as a business expense. But then my OCD, going back to this midline, I'm going to have to go one side to the other. I think we should all just do this together. Everyone purchase black and white cookies. I need to step away from the cookies. Actually, no. While we're talking about cookies, now we got to talk about the fucking cookie jar scene. Jesus Christ, you guys, this was so bad. How did cookies and cakes and lovely pastries get involved? God help me if they even bring donuts into this, because I cannot say no to a donut. I'll have to be a donut racist. Let's get back to the fucking cookies. This is horrible. This is like a bridge too far, this cookie jar comment. Is this a thing? Do guys refer to women as a cookie jar? I don't want Benjamin to ever, not now, not then, not ever use the phrase cookie jar to refer to any part of a Keeney or anything a Keeney makes and where it needs to go. I'm going to take a jump and speak on behalf of a Keeney, myself, and every female on the face of the earth. None of us want to hear you referring to our bodies, any part of our bodies, as a kitchen receptacle. And by the way, I can guarantee you, in the great words of Lin-Manuel Miranda, she'll never be satisfied. Now let's jump to this really depressing dinner where, you know, Benjamin admits that he has no intention to honor her family and follow through on his promise. He's also ashamed to tell his own family of a Keeney. That was such BS, and I felt her pain in that. I do understand Benjamin's point of view. I really do. I listened to him describe having to explain marrying a woman after 2 weeks, but you know what? She's smart. She's quick-witted, she's open-minded, she's beautiful, and for her to have to put herself and her family out there on worldwide TV only to have Benjamin keep her a secret from all his friends and family, that's bullshit. It's crappy, and it makes me admire Akini so much more. Well, thank you guys for listening. We're going to wrap it up right here. Please sign up for Patreon, patreon.com/realitybpod. Support the show, get some bonus episodes, some extra perks. Check out Total Request Podcast with my co-host Amanda from Amanda Loves to Hate Teen Mom Podcast. This week we are recapping, an episode of Broad City, the Wisdom Teeth episode. That is at patreon.com/AmandaAndJody. And remember, if you sign up, you request the shows, we break them down for you. Only $4 a month. That's $1 an episode. I'll put all those links in the show notes to make it easy for you. And until we talk next time, take care of yourself this week, hug someone you love, and stay salty.